Welcome to The Brand Advantage. This series, brought to you by Bluetex, explores how brand creates real competitive leverage by increasing enterprise visibility, strengthening credibility, and ultimately raising enterprise value. Each episode distills proven strategic thinking from the Bluetex perspective into focused, practical insight, designed to be consumed, not pitched. Strong brands create advantage long before the deal. Now let's jump into another episode of The Brand Advantage.
I want you to picture the last trade show you went to. You're walking the floor, you know, dodging people, and someone from a booth just shoves this glossy folder into your hand. Mm-hmm. You take it to be polite, you get back to your hotel room, and be honest, what actually happens to that stuff?
It goes straight into the recycling bin. I mean, usually before I've even unpacked, I think I've probably thrown away enough branded stress balls to fill a swimming pool.
Right. It's the trade show handout era of marketing. And it feels like you're doing something, but it achieves absolutely nothing. Today, we're tearing that down.
Yeah.
We're doing a deep dive into this idea that content isn't just a library of PDFs gathering digital dust. It has to be the front door of your brand.
It's a huge shift in mindset. We're not just talking about the make it pretty department anymore. We're talking about building a revenue engine.
Oh, no.
Specifically, we're digging into a strategy piece from January 2026 by Jason Siegel of Bluetex.
Right. Navigating the future of content marketing in B2B and B2G. And that B2G, business to government, that's what really caught my eye. We always talk B2B, and we just assume government is, you know, B2B with more paperwork.
Yeah, more paperwork.
But this source splits the world in two. It argues selling to the government requires a totally different psychological approach. But, okay, before we get into the government stuff, what's the mission here? What problem is Siegel trying to solve?
The mission is to stop committing what he calls random acts of marketing.
Mm-hmm.
You know the type, you post a blog just because it's Tuesday. Siegel's argument is that we need to build a content engine that creates operational excellence. It's less about being a creative writer, more about being a product manager for information.
Okay, hold on. I hear phrases like operational excellence and my eyes start to glaze over a bit. They're buzzwords. Does the source actually define what effective content even means?
It does, and it's surprisingly specific. Effective isn't about views or likes. It's about three specific business outcomes. First, it has to increase qualified attention.
So getting the right eyeballs, not just any eyeballs.
Precisely. Your search and social game. Second, and this is the hard one, it has to accelerate consideration.
Accelerate consideration. That sounds like a fancy way of saying make them buy faster.
Ideally, yeah.
Yeah.
But practically, it's about removing friction. It's answering the questions that are making a buyer hesitate. You know, if they're wondering, will this integrate with my system, and they can't find that answer in 2 minutes, you've lost them.
And the third outcome.
Supporting conversion and retention. This is the bottom of the funnel stuff. Proof points, enablement materials, the things that actually get a signature on a contract. If your content isn't doing one of those three things, Siegel says you shouldn't be making it.
And this connects to that shift you mentioned, thinking like a product team, not a creative agency. That feels like a big mindset change for a lot of marketers.
It's a huge culture shock.
Yeah.
But think about it. You don't build software just because you feel inspired. You have a roadmap. Siegel suggests a quarterly editorial plan that's aligned with revenue targets.
Mm.
You're using first-party intent data, CRM insights.
So if you see 50 people searching your site for API documentation, you don't write a blog post about the company picnic.
Exactly. You build the content to solve the user's problem.
Yeah.
It's strategic. Not just artistic.
Okay, now let's get into the meat of this. The B2B versus B2G distinction. I think most people assume B2G is just selling to a really, really slow company.
And that assumption is exactly why so many companies fail in the public sector. It is a fascinating difference. So let's start with B2B. In that world, buyers want clarity, confidence, and speed.
Speed seems to be the key word there.
It is. They want the solution de-risked. They need to know the ROI, and they need to know it yesterday. Content is all about category leadership, differentiation, proving you're better than the competition.
Basically, show me how this makes me money and prove it won't get me fired.
That's the perfect summary.
Okay, so that's the corporate world, but B2G.
That buyer has a totally different burden. They're not just worried about ROI. In fact, that might be fourth or fifth on their list. They're worried about public accountability, policy mandates, procurement rules.
The red tape factor.
It's way more than just red tape. It's the law. The source points out that B2G content has to honor compliance things like Section 508 accessibility.
That's for making content accessible to people with disabilities, right?
Correct. And in B2B, if your PDF isn't accessible, well, that's unfortunate. In B2G, if it's not accessible, you are legally disqualified from the contract. You don't even get to bid.
Wow. So it's literally pass-fail based on formatting.
Often, yes.
Yeah.
And you can't just make big, bold marketing claims. You have to use evidence-based claims that align with mission impact. You don't say, we have the fastest cloud. You say, our data residency compliance allows for mission-critical uptime.
It's a completely different language. The source mentions things like contract vehicles and security posture. If you try to sell to the Department of Defense using fluffy B2B marketing speak, you're going to get laughed out of the room.
Or worse, you'll trigger a compliance audit. The concept that really stood out to me here was capture support.
Capture support? That sounds like military lingo.
It basically is. In the commercial world, we talk about sales enablement. In government, it's capture management. This involves things like capture kits and the dreaded orals deck.
An orals deck sounds intense. Is that just a pitch deck?
It's the final showdown. Imagine you're bidding on a massive government contract. You often have to present your proposal orally to a strict evaluation panel. You aren't pitching, you are testifying.
So you can't just wing it with a standard slide deck?
Absolutely not. These decks are designed to mirror the exact language of the RFP, the request for proposal. If the RFP asks for outcome A and you talk about outcome C because you think it's cooler, you just lose points. It's not about being catchy, it's about being correct.
And because the stakes are so high, the source talks about a pre-flight checklist. I'm guessing this isn't just checking for typos.
No, it's a rigorous safety check. Think of it like a pilot before takeoff. You validate every claim, you check for export controls, you ensure the language aligns with mission outcomes. In B2B, a mistake is embarrassing. In B2G, a mistake can be a protestable offense where a competitor sues you.
That is a wild difference in pressure. Okay, so we have the strategy, we have the audiences, now the machinery. The source brings up AI, but with a pretty nuanced take, especially given the compliance stuff.
He does. The headline is, AI is a force multiplier, not the author of record.
So no ChatGPT, write me a white paper.
Absolutely not. The workflow is... use AI for outlines, for topic clustering, maybe to summarize a webinar into a blog post. But humans are for judgment, tone, and fact validation.
And this connects right back to B2G, doesn't it?
Exactly. You cannot trust an AI with procurement-sensitive contexts without heavy human QA. If an AI hallucinates a security certification you don't have and you put that in a proposal, you are in huge trouble.
Speaking of machines, there's a new acronym, AEO, Answer Engine Optimization. Is this just SEO with a new coat of paint?
I think it's fundamentally different, and here's why. We spend 20 years obsessing over keywords. But people, especially executives, they aren't just typing keywords anymore. They're asking full questions and expecting an immediate synthesized answer.
Right, from Google's AI or whatever.
Right.
So how do you write for an answer engine?
You stop writing the recipe blog intro, you know, where you have to scroll past 5 paragraphs of someone's life story just to find out how many eggs to use.
I hate that. Just give me the recipe.
Exactly. Executives want the recipe. You structure your pages with descriptive headings, with lists that can act as featured snippets. You define the term immediately.
It's like writing the summary first.
In a way, yes. You give the direct answer right at the top so the engine can grab it, and then you interlink assets so a reader can go deeper. The source calls it the click journey. High-level overview to technical deep dive in just 2 clicks.
Efficient. I like it. Now, who is actually reading this stuff? It's never just one person.
Right. It's a buying group. Mm-hmm. Gartner says the average B2B buying group is like 6 to 10 people.
Yeah.
You have executives, practitioners, finance, security. You can't feed them all the same meal.
You can't give the CFO a technical architecture guide. I mean, you could, but...
but they will not read it. And the tech lead doesn't care about your market's energy. The source breaks it down. For executives, briefs on risk and investment rationale.
And for the practitioners, the people actually using it.
Guides, steps, architecture. They need to know, how does this actually work?
And finance.
Interactive ROI tools. Let them play with the numbers. For compliance, you need one-pagers on security and privacy.
That makes perfect sense, but that sounds exhausting. How do you create and distribute all of that without a huge team?
You use the hub and spoke model. This is key. You anchor the core content, the hub, on your site. a big research report, maybe. Then you atomize it.
Atomize it. Break it down into smaller pieces.
Exactly. That one big report becomes 20 spokes. A chart becomes a LinkedIn post. A chapter becomes a newsletter. A key finding becomes a sales slide.
So one big effort turns into a bunch of little pieces of content.
Precisely. And don't forget video. Short videos for reach, webinars to capture intent.
Yeah.
You meet the buyer where they are.
Okay, but here's the classic friction point. Marketing makes the content, throws it over the wall, and sales says, we don't have anything to send to prospects.
It's the eternal struggle. And Siegel is clear. Alignment is not a quarterly meeting with donuts. It's a shared pipeline view.
I love the enablement framework he proposes. It's so simple, but I bet almost nobody does it.
It's incredibly actionable. For every solution, you define three things. One, the top five objections. Two, the three most relevant proof points. And three, the two best assets per persona.
That's it. Objections, proof points, and assets.
That's the core. Imagine giving a salesperson a content card, a cheat sheet. If they ask about security, show them this one pager. If they ask about price, show them this ROI calculator. It handles 90% of the conversations.
And there has to be a feedback loop, I assume.
Yes. After every major pursuit, you update the package. Hey, that case study didn't land. Okay, swap it out. It turns content into a living tool, not a static library.
Not a library that gathers dust. I'm putting that on a sticky note. So let's talk metrics. If this is a revenue engine, we need to measure the horsepower.
And we're not counting likes anymore.
Goodbye, vanity metrics.
The source pushes for real metrics. Engage time, repeat visitors. Mid-funnel is content-assisted MQLs. But the holy grail is the outcome metrics. Impact on win rates.
That seems tough to isolate, though. How do you know the content won the deal?
You can't attribute it 100%, but you use cohort views. You look at the data. Did accounts that engage with this white paper move through the pipeline faster than accounts that didn't? If the content group closes 20% faster, you've proved ROI.
That's a powerful argument for the CFO. Okay, so if I'm listening to this and realizing my content strategy is a mess, the source gives us a roadmap, a 90-day sprint.
This is the break glass in case of emergency plan to kickstart momentum.
Walk us through it. How do you go from zero to hero in 3 months?
It's tight, but doable if you focus. Weeks 1 and 2, the audit. Interview sales, see what you have, and define just three thematic pillars tied to revenue.
Only three.
Only three. Focus is everything. Weeks 3 and 4, production. You make one flagship asset per pillar, a big benchmark report or a guide.
Got it. Weeks 5 and 6.
Distribution and enablement. You launch the hub and spoke plan, and you give sales those contact cards we talked about.
Weeks 7 and 8.
Interaction. You run two webinars aligned to those pillars to capture intent and get people engaging live.
Weeks 9 and 10.
Review. You look at the metrics. What's working? What's flopping?
And finally, weeks 11 and 12.
You publish a recap and you retire the low performers. That's the hard part, killing what didn't work.
No.
Then you plan the next quarter based on real data. It's a cycle.
It sounds so much more manageable when you break it down like that. It's not boil the ocean, it's build three pillars.
And that's really the theme of this whole deep dive, whether it's B2B or B2G. It's about structure, moving from art project to business process.
So big picture, B2B is about speed and ROI. B2G is about compliance and mission.
Correct. But the common thread is trust. In B2B, trust is you won't lose my money. In B2G, trust is you won't break the law or compromise the mission. And effective content is just the mechanism for delivering that trust.
And doing it without relying solely on AI to write for you.
That is the crucial final point. AI is a tool, not the author. And this raises a really provocative question for me as we wrap up.
What's that?
We talked about answer engines. As these bots become the primary way people find information and they start answering all the basic questions, what happens to brand voice?
That's a good point. If the AI gives everyone the same standard answer, everyone sounds the same.
Exactly. So will the human voice in content become the only true luxury good in marketing?
Oh, that is interesting.
Think about it. If everyone uses AI to answer the basics, then the brand with the most distinct, opinionated human perspective becomes the only one that stands out. If we all sound like robots, the human wins by default.
That is something to chew on. Is your content a commodity or is it a luxury good? We will leave you with that thought. Thanks for diving in with us.
Thanks for listening.